The following contains adult language, content, and description of actions that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
So first of all, welcome to World Music Views. Before we get into the projects you're working on, just give me a background, how you got into the business.
Okay. So, my name is Nolan Baines. I'm of Guyanese descent. I was born in Guyana. I moved to America when I was like 9, 10, right, in the 80s. And interesting times because hip hop was being conceived at that time, right? Like hip hop was coming to power at that time. And of course, dancehall was sort of parallel. The growth of dancehall was happening at the same time. And so I was in a unique position growing up in Brooklyn, in Flatbush, which if you know Flatbush, you know it's, you know, Little Caribbean,
right? Jamaica, listen.
Right. And there was this hybrid culture that was being formed at the time, right? So you had people from all over the Caribbean diaspora blending in with Americans and Spanish people. And so you had all this norms and cultural cues and everything all mixed up in one pot. And that in and of itself was a culture. It was a hybrid culture. And so dancehall reggae became kind of normal for us, right? Like when we're listening to music, we would listen to Red Alert, blasting the new, you know, KRS-One shit. And then on the next side, we're going to our Aboriginals to juggle music and play the latest dancehall rhythms, right? So it was like all happening at the same time. And so growing up, I ended up like loving those two formats. And then in high school, obviously, everybody was part of a set. Everybody write lyrics. Everybody a DJ, right? And so I sort of fell into this this internship at a company called Sleeping Bag Records. And Sleeping Bag was, at the time, one of the first hip-hop labels to have gold records, right? They had, like, EPMD and Nice and Smooth and all these artists. They later got bought by Def Jam, and a lot of those artists ended up on Def Jam, but they were one of the first. And when I walked in the building as a kid interviewing for my internship, we got into a conversation about dancehall, and they gave me these compilation records and was like, go home, listen to this, come back tomorrow and tell me what you think. And what I realized was dancehall, and it was all old dancehall songs, all old hits that we had heard months and months before. And I was like, who are you selling this to? Like, this is old stuff. And the guy laughed at me. He was like, I'm not selling it to the people that made it hot. I'm selling it to white college kids. And for the first time, I was like, wait, they're listening to our shit? Right? Like, I didn't understand that. Right? And so they hired me, and I started my journey there and ended up starting a label called Signet, which was a New York-based dancehall label. We signed Shaggy and Red Fox. And one of our biggest releases was a song called Tour by Capleton, the remix. And we got Lil Jon to remix that record. Yeah. But the whole
Def Jam though.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole concept was based on the hybrid culture. Right. So when we worked with Shaggy, all of Shaggy's early stuff, hybrid culture. You could hear the hip hop beats in there. You could hear the rhythm. It was dancehall, but it was a texture that was different from what Jamaica was doing. And the reason why we did that was we couldn't afford the man them in Jamaica. We couldn't afford to pay Shaba and Admiral Bailey. We just didn't have the money. So we were just working with local youths. And we stumbled on this sound. And Sting International, who's also a hybrid cat, because he, you know, Caribbean family, I guess, and, you know, grew up in Brooklyn, was able to put the sounds together, and that's how it blew, right? Anyway, so fast forward, I'm at Signet, Tour blows up, Capleton becomes a big star, he gets signed to Def Jam. People started noticing my work. I ended up taking an offer to work for MTV, because MTV was really the Google of the day, it was the Apple of the day, it was the Spotify of the day at that time. And so it was an interesting place. And then talk about going from Black culture into a setting that's completely white. It was culture shock. So they hardly wanted to hear hip hop, much less some dancehall shit, right? Like you have to come with it. And so I kept fighting. You know, I became the head of music marketing. I was able to slot people in. So I put Morgan Heritage on some of our shit, Beanie Man. I put, you know, the Marleys, of course, because they had the kind of records that they could recognize. Wherever I could fit some Kevin Little, right? Sean Paul, of course, Shaggy later. Like just anywhere we could sneak it in. We were sneaking it in. And it wasn't just me. It was a whole bunch of other people that was from the diaspora just fighting. And Sean Paul really was the tipping point. Like when Give Me the Light came out, I used to do this internal concert. And every month we would bring artists in. Everybody from the building would come and have lunch and listen to the artists. And I was like, fuck that. I'm going big. I'm going Flatbush. If they don't like it, fuck it. I'm going to try it, right? So I took over the event and I programmed a bunch of dancehall artists. Sean was the headliner. And we went all out. We got beef patties for lunch, right? Ting. We just overdid it, like just over the top. And the programming team came up, right? Because it was so popular in the building, everybody was talking about it. And it was the space that could hold about maybe 50, 75 people. About 200 people came up. Everybody from the mail room, people from the finance floor, just people that love dancehall was finally like, wow, y'all are talking to us. And what happened was it was such a big hit. The programming team was like, we should put that guy Sean Paul on spring break. And I was like, yes. And after that, it was just a floodgates of other things. But then what derailed us was the controversy, right? The sort of the homophobia thing. We had a role. I remember I was negotiating to set up the VMA block party in Miami. And we had like 8,000 people every day coming to this block party. And they were going to shoot content from the stage to feed into the main show, right? So we had like Lil Wayne and Pitbull and all these artists that were sort of cultural to Miami, had the Miami swag. I had Morgan Heritage on there, Beanie Man, a few other people. And the controversy hit, all the labels backed off. Beanie was signed to Virgin at the time. Virgin was like, I'm cool. We had no infrastructure, no body of power to fight for Beanie Man at that time, right? To tell his side of the story. Capleton was on there too. Capleton got bounced. Buju had a record that got added at that time. They pulled the record off. I tried to create this thing where I could get those artists to come speak on college campuses to talk about the controversy, to have that exchange. But who's backing Buju? Like, who's helping him on his side to organize that? VP was trying, but it didn't really translate. None of the major labels that had reggae artists at the time cared. And it was a major blow. At the time, I didn't realize it because I was like, oh, you know, we'll do something else. But it was a major blow. The momentum we had built up was completely shot. And then we started taking on that stigma of like, that's the homophobic music, right? Like we were getting a lot of that kind of shit.
Do you think that era of artists affect how nowadays artists are received in America?
That's a good question. That is a really good question. I don't know if they affect how fans perceive the music and the culture. Certainly the gatekeepers, right? The music directors, the program directors, who are now probably in bigger positions of power, right? So, you know, they have a mindset of what it is. But I think Afrobeats, and I've had this argument and this debate with folks in Jamaica, but I think Afrobeats has done a job of reconstructing and reimagining what the perception of dancehall should be, right? Because Afrobeats is happy music, right? We've had this thing, and dancehall went through this dark phase where it was pure gunman lyrics and, you know.
Oh, it's still there. It's still right. Very much gunman. World Music Views every week is who are the biggest gunman.
Yeah, yeah. And which is crazy. And I try to explain that it's not going to translate to an American ear because they don't understand the intricacies of what you're talking about, right? They know it's a badman tune. They love the track. The track is wicked, but there's something about what you're saying that's a little dark. And they got their own darkness, right? So they're kind of like,
When the role meets with their darkness because they're darker than you.
Yes, yes. That's a perfect way to say it. And they, unfortunately, I think America only looks at reggae music and dancehall music and anything from the diaspora as a means to escape, right? Like, I want to be happy when I hear it. Sunshine, summertime music, like that's how we are viewed and that's how they see it. If you look at how they program radio, you don't see big dancehall rhythm records added during the winter. Literally, it's during the springtime and summer months is when you hear the biggest dancehall bruckle tunes. That's when they
add one song every year.
Yep. And so Afrobeats kind of changed that because the music was rhythmic. It had everything dancehall used to have, except it had these easy hooks that you could just follow. And the rhythm is innately us. So I just felt like maybe that's helping people to rediscover dancehall again, but we don't have the faces to take advantage of the momentum and the interest that's coming to the tent, right? Like, who's the next one? Not to say that Shaggy and Sean Paul is the only dancehall artist with appeal, but when I listen to Popcorn stuff, and Popcorn crossed the border to me again, when you listen to his stuff, it has a vibe, but it's not pop to me, right? So when you listen to Chronix is really cultural and it has a really dope effect, but it's not gonna play on Hot 97 the way a Sean Paul, a happy record would play. So the nuances, I think we have to figure out, and I don't know who's figuring it out. I don't know who's on the other side talking about, okay, how are we gonna do this, you know?
Yeah, well, that's why I launched World Music View, so that they could see on national TV and online what's being consumed, what the top five songs are. My next question to you, and I asked you this already, but I just wanna ask you for World Music Views, what are your thoughts on the present crop of dancehall artists with label deals? Jada Kingdom, Shensia, Spice, who just dropped her album. She's nominated for a Grammy. Who else? Just anybody that's being... Oh, Coffee's another one. Her album is about to drop. What are your thoughts on Shensia, Coffee, and that crop of new, especially new artists coming out?
Well, listen, first of all, big up the queen them, right? Because the women are doing it, right? There's something very translatable when a female artist takes the mic and starts to say, I'm going to champion dancehall, right? There's something kind of empowering. We're being over at 300, where one of our biggest artists is Megan Thee Stallion. We see the mindset of the fans and how they embrace an artist like that, a liberated, I'm not afraid, I'm empowered, I'm gonna write my own shit, own my own shit, love me or hate me, this is who I am. That's translating to the general fan base. So the fact that I'm not surprised that what the Caribbean and what Jamaica is producing right now are women with the same mindset, the same energy, the same vibe, right? Spice, empowered woman, like there's no way to say that she's not, right? I think, first of all, I'm proud of them, right? Like that's my first statement. I think they're all incredibly talented, pound for pound, put them on a stage with any dancehall artist, man, female, they're gonna slaughter. There's something unique and different about them. Shensia, I love her lyricism. I think she could translate in America very easy. The part of it though that I think I worry about is what you and I spoke about before, which is, will we A&R these records correctly? And then will we work the system that is required to gain success on a major label level? Are we gonna work the system correctly and put them in a position to win? Who is championing their projects on the label side? Who's championing it on the management side? And who has the long-term vision for them, right? Because right now it's sort of like you come to my house and you say, Nolan, I need a lift, right? I gotta go cross town. And I open up the garage and I have a Ferrari and I have a bicycle. And I was like, yo, pick one, right? And you're like, yo, of course, you wanna pick the Ferrari, right? But you don't know how to drive stick shift. You don't know how the car is going to handle. It's a shitload of power, though. If you can just understand that and know how to navigate it, you'll be crossed down in like 2 minutes, right? So that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that we don't know how to
drive. Brilliant. Why are you so bright? Where are you from? That's a brilliant analysis.
Listen, I'm living this every day. Like, I'm sitting in these meetings and I'm hearing how we are promoting Young Thug, how we promote Gunna, how we take an artist over a 2-year span and grow them gradually, methodically, how the team kind of rally around a hit, how they rally around a song that's just gonna lay the foundation for an artist. Just all that thinking, all that brain power and intricacies, who's doing that for our artists on the other side? When I think about Coffee, oh my God, how could you not love Coffee? The package, young, you know, lyricist, just has an international appeal. But again, is management strong enough to fight with the major label to make sure that a vision is seen, right? Like, who's managing scalability? Who's saying, we're gonna make these moves in order to embrace this new audience. And then we're going to make these moves to make sure the core audience is fine. And then at year two, we're going to introduce this, this, and this. Like, who's doing that? Because we do that every day at this label for our artist roster. Right. And that's what I'm worried about. You know, like, what's going to happen? Who's in their corner? Talent is undeniable, though.
I don't know if you can speak on this, but I'm going to ask you, would you or are you looking for other Jamaican acts in light of those acts being signed to Interscope and RCA?
Right. So I would say the 300, and I'm going to speak a little bit for the A&R team, because, again, just like I told you, when I was at Viacom, I was the gnat that was always like trying to push Caribbean culture to the point where I kind of became the Caribbean dude, like, oh, here he comes. You're going to push some shit on us, right? So I've learned in my approach that I have to build a business case for everything that we want to champion when it comes to our culture. We have to show why, not just that you should do it, but it makes business sense. Here's how you do it. And so our A&R team is always looking, like, the research team is amazing. These kids are tapped in. Like, sometimes I hit them up and be like, yo, you ever hear about this artist? And I'm thinking, I just found something. Like, yeah, they pull all the stats for me. Yeah, we've been following him for months now. Like, I'm like, shit. So with reggae, what happens with our music and even Afrobeats to a certain degree is it's an experiential music, right? Most of the popularity comes from when you hear it live and when you partake in what the music has to offer. When it comes to streaming and all the platforms in which we generate revenue, with our presence on those platforms are not as strong as it should be, right? Like, we're not working Spotify the way we should. We're not working, you know, Pandora and XM and all that shit the way we should. Because the same pushback that we get trying to push our culture onto mainstream platforms, there's people like us that work for those platforms that's doing the same fight. That's trying to, hey, you should be listening to this artist and check out Chronix because this is what he's done and whatever, whatever. And so I would say it's the same thing for 300. They're open to everything because they champion youth culture across the board globally. But what we don't have is that package to walk in to say, this is the next one. Here's why. Here's the management company is so impressive. They know how to take an artist from left to right. Here's what their monthly listenership is on Spotify. So now a business person can sit down, look at the packaging and say, if we put this level of resources into them, we could create a multiple of this with this artist, right? That's what they do with mainstream artists every single day. But for some reason, we don't have the basic sort of numbers and reach on the platforms that generate revenue to help them with that case. So what I'm doing right now is I'm working on building case studies that would empower my A&R team to feel comfortable saying, yeah, that's the next one. Like, all right, Nolan, you got me this, 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 and this. I have a whole team of people. I'm working with people like you that have media platforms that can say, this is the next one. And here's why the monthly listenership looks the way it does, right? We're literally trying to create a micro infrastructure to help an artist get from development to the point where they can see the business viability of them.
I've been inspired by 300, Leo or Kevin from a distance for a while. Matter of fact, that's how I even met Kevin. Just like I met you, I literally got Kevin's number, email. I call him cold call. I'm like, yo, let's pull up. And he literally he took me to dinner in New York. And we had dinner and we just, you know, talked about a lot of stuff. So I'm inspired by what you guys are doing. And I'm also inspired by what you're doing in film and pushing out the new media content. Tell us about that. What are some of the things you're working on in terms of film and new media?
Listen, right now the world has changed in such a way that record companies are no longer record companies, right? They're media hubs, right? They're content hubs, right? Like, you got to look at a record now like audio content. That's all it is. So for a record company to not have the ability to venture into video, into long form storytelling, would mean a certain debt for that company, right? They would fall behind very quickly. So what Kevin did, Kevin is a visionary, by the way. So what he did with you is very common for him. Like, he's fascinated by culture. He's a student of culture. And that's, if you look at 300's journey, everything is culturally driven, whether it's, okay, what's happening in Atlanta? How do we take that? What's happening in Memphis? How do we take that and package it? You know, sign in Mary J. Blige, who is the queen of hip hop soul, and then how do you reintroduce her to a new, like that's Kevin. And so Kevin hit us up, actually my partner Kelly and Kevin go way back. Like I knew Kevin from the Viacom days, but Kelly and Kevin really knew each other well. And he reached out to, him and Kelly were having a conversation about another project we had. And he was like, yo, you know what? Bring that project over here, but it's time for me to do a content hub. I wanna do 300 studios. And Kelly was like, yo, I need you to come to this meeting with Kev, because we're going to be talking through how do we structure it. And so it took a month to kind of create the structure, the business model, the whole thing. And then the pandemic hit. And so we thought it was just going to kill the whole deal. So we moved on working on other stuff. 2 weeks later, Kevin is like, this is the perfect time. We have to do it now. This is when people are going to be home. They're going to want to watch shit. They're going to, you know. And Kevin also had this issue with his roster of young artists that were disrupted. Their tours were messed up. Their records weren't being, they couldn't go to the studio to record, finish recording. So he was like, listen, I need every creative. And I say this to Jamaican artists and Caribbean artists every time I see them too. Nothing should stop you from creating. I don't care if it's a pandemic, you have an iPhone. You should be in front of your iPhone singing and playing your guitar and sending it out to the world. And so we created this thing called 300 Unplugged, and we shot it during the pandemic, and people were literally sending us iPhone videos. We would chop it up, put Kevin to host it, and because we couldn't do anything, we couldn't go anywhere. And so we launched 300 Studios with a short form programming strategy first. And it was like, let's find a culture. Let's come up with these short form shows, 300 Unplugged. I think now we're up to about close to 100 episodes. We featured a bunch of Caribbean artists on there and African artists. Shaggy was on it. Dre Island was on it. Jupiter from Ghana was on there. Like Denzel White, this Guyanese singer is on there. Like just really cool shit. And we got a chance to create a community, right? So that's 300 Studios started focusing on that. But then long form is where the money is and where we really wanted to spend a lot of our time. And so we came out the gate real strong. We dropped a docuseries on Netflix last week called Race. And it's based on the only active African-American driver in NASCAR. And this brother, Bubba Wallace.
Was I didn't know it was you. I'm a watcher.
That's us, yeah. Look it up, yo, look at the credits. We got our little, you know. but Bubba is actually a client of Kevin's. Kevin actually came on board. He owns part of the management company. And so Kevin introduced us to Bubba and his team. And immediately I started writing up a treatment, started going back and forth with them. We brought in this guy, Eric Parker, who was the director. Eric did Nas's documentary. He did a bunch of documentaries, but just understood the voice. And Bubba had just sort of led the charge to ban the Confederate flag, which is a huge trigger in America at the time, right? And so the story was amazing. I think the reviews that we're getting right now is insane. But that's the type of stories we want to tell. We want to tell our stories from our point of view, through our lens, and we're looking for the unique stories, right? And so 300 Studios, I think right now we have about 25 shows in development, various partnerships, and we're looking to really leverage a lot of our artist stories as well. Everyone from Mary to T Grizzly, Young Thug, Gunna, T Shine, all these guys have stories, unique, culturally relevant stories. And so that's us, man. 300 Studios. Kelly and I are the two architects of it right now. We have we outsourced a lot of young production companies. We have a lot of young writers, directors. Our goal, just like the label, is to discover the next crop. And so we're discovering the next crop of creatives who we can help and cultivate and help them find their voice and give them platforms to release their stories on. So just like we're having this conversation with you, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you a fun question. Tell me your top five all-time reggae artists and all-time dancehall artists.
Word. Oh, okay. This is a good one. So top five reggae first, right? Yeah. Of course, it would be blasphemous for Bob not to be in there, of course, right? So Bob Marley, Dennis Brown, one of the wickedest. I wish I could have managed Dennis Brown. I would have made Dennis. I felt like I could have made him. Super. Well, no, sorry. Dennis Brown. Gregory Isaacs, for sure. All right. You're hearing the Lovers Rock love that I have.
I'm there.
Peter Tosh, I felt was like a revolutionary, right? And one more. Let me see who I could. There's so many. All right. So I would go with Yellow. Well, no, Yellow Man is dancehall, so I can't put him in that fold.
Would you not in your top five?
Wouldn't be reggae though. I would put Buju in my dancehall five. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna put a young dude in there. I'm a huge fan of Chronics, so I'm gonna put Chronics in there.
Good choice.
Dancehall now. All right, Shinehead. Right, love Shinehead. Love Lieutenant Stitchy. I felt like Papa San.
Buju. Papa San set the pace for what 95% of rappers and DJs do right now.
Absolutely. I mentioned Buju. Buju is my four. And then the fifth one, I would say Capleton. I just felt like Capes just brings Africa to me. Like, it's just all the energy of warrior culture. Like, I love him.
Yeah, that's a good list. I'm actually watch the Netflix flick on the race.
Please, watch it. And if you like it,
I'll probably do a review.
I'm gonna
do a review. I do these reviews for music mostly on Dancehall Mag and World Music Views. You remember when Source Magazine used to be the Bible?
Of course.
Whatever you're watching in culture. That's what I'm trying to bring back in this time for what we're doing. You know, so
we need it.
The infrastructure you spoke about is important because you need award shows, just like you need the magazines, you need all these looks. You need these places that people can go to and appreciate culture and also get a perspective that's tasteful, you know? Absolutely. A lot of people just saying, you see how intelligent you put together and you talk about how the Ferrari and the bicycle. A lot of people are just saying things now and be like, yo, that's nice. Or that's whack. But we need to know, like, why is it whack? Like, what are the choices made, you know? And that's what we're trying to do. You said the key characters on your label, like the artists, right? They have stories to tell. And it dawned on me that Jamaica itself is a character.
Like, absolutely.
Just Jamaica is a character, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Can I give you some artists that I would love for our Caribbean diaspora to recognize? So there's a few artists that I think we're sort of supporting right now that's from the Caribbean. So Noah Power. We just released a single for him on our distribution platform called Sparta. So when most of your artists, most of the Jamaican artists that's thinking about releasing their music, I know they probably go to TuneCore and some of these companies, look at Sparta, because Sparta is a direct connection to 300. So once it's up there, we pay attention to it. We look at it. We sometimes, in the case of Noah, we're able to integrate with Noah's management and say, hey, we want to do this. So we featured Noah on our Unplugged series, right? I think if you go on there now, there's probably a few hundred thousand views or something. Like, we're, you know, trying to put him in the mixtape project I told you about. Like, there's certain artists we think will resonate. And so we're trying to build a case. So if artists are listening to this interview or you know, reading your platform, I want them to know about Sparta. That's an option. And there's people that understand the culture that's behind that.
Is that similar to United Masters?
Yes, exactly. Except, you know, I think our thing is a little bit different in that it started out being invite only, where we were really trying to curate at the level of artists, but it is a direct upstream to 300. So we've signed a bunch of artists from that platform. And it's just something that I think I want Caribbean artists to know about. You know what I mean? Like, I've been turning on, like, every friend I have that's in the space, I've been turning them onto it. I was talking to Bungie Garland the other day and I was like, Bungie, like, you know, you got to know about this. I was talking to Morgan Heritage and that team. And I was like, yo, I know y'all are putting out stuff on the other side, but if you have aspirations to try to create that case study for yourself, I need you to know about this. So Sparta, the distribution is part of the 300 universe. So
you're definitely going to see an influx. They're always in my DMs trying to get connections and all that. So I'm going to send them Sparta. Spell it.
Sparta distribution. Oh.
In terms of how Jamaican artists are being sold in America over the years, which era you think was the best era?
That's a good question. I would say the era of, for me, from my point of view, I would say maybe Bob Marley, right? That was, I think, when America cared about the cultural nuances and the revolutionary elements of the music, right? It wasn't just about the song. It was about sort of the whole movement behind, you know, the lyrics, the artists. And Bob Marley was the perfect ambassador. So I think at the time when America was going through this revolution themselves, this music came about that fit that profile. And so he was being positioned like the Rolling Stones, like, you know, Jerry Garcia, like, you know, like all these guys. Like, I think that was probably the best time because they saw the pureness in the music. The second era to that would probably be like the Sean Paul era. Sean Paul, Shaggy was before Sean, but I would say Sean Paul because there was a real kinship with dancehall at that time. I mean, with hip hop at that time, right? So there was like this connection. But, and also you had an ambassador that could represent it. I think any other time it became more about this gimmicky throwaway music kind of thing, right? Like they really didn't capture the hearts and minds of America in a way that would make them get invested in the culture, right? That's what
we need. How do you think that can happen? Like, how do you think the culture can find a superstar?
Well, I think we have superstars. I just think it has to be positioned correctly, and we have to speak in the language of the industry here. And I know people hate to hear that because it sounds like you're crossing over, right? But that's not what it is. It's the business language of how labels make decisions and how the infrastructure make those choices on who to invest in, right? So I think, for example, like I love Chronix, right? I think Chronix I love the throwback component of what Chronix represents. And I love how he intermingles with like current dancehall, the way he writes, right? Like you could hear current dancehall, but you hear that thing. The problem is, I think, for a lot of artists that has craft out a niche is the infrastructure part. It's the vision. It's like, okay, how do I have this level of audience? How do I grow it to this? How do I grow it to this? And then how do I take a Chronix record and make it compatible with the platforms that's going to promote the music, right? And having a team that understands the nuances of those platforms. So I think there are superstars. I just think there needs to be somebody, some mechanism, some organization that is able to organize the business. The same way Jamaica has tons of business people that can say, boy, we're going to go sell this, whatever, this construction technology.
Yeah.
So we need the same thing. We need the same thing. And I was hoping, between you and I was really hoping that movement of Chronix, Coffee, Jesse Royale, Kez Nandy, like all that whole new sort of roots, dancehall, like I want that to pop up.
The reggae revivals, they call them.
I had a lot of hope for that movement because I felt like America was ready for that. And you saw what happened with the whole Black Lives Matter stuff. That movement could have been perfect, but I don't know what happened. It was like we missed the boat or we missed the alarm. I don't know.
Yeah, if you have fragmented industry, you have a fragmented push out, you know, if they
absolutely
push together.
That's the perfect way to say it.
Yeah. I appreciate this so much, man. And I think, I don't know more than what you just tell me, but based on what you told me, the culture needs you.
I appreciate that. Man, listen, I think when I was, me and a friend of mine talk about this all the time, right? Like I have another brethren, his name is Cooley Ranks. He's an artist too. And Cooley is Jamaican, Nigerian, and I think he was born in the UK, but he's a Yardman, right? Like they, you know, he's back and forth there. His grandfather's from Jamaica, so he grew up with his grandfather. And we have this conversation a lot about how it's hard for us to reapply a lot of the energy back into the system when the system don't have people like you, right? Like most of the times when I'm working on projects or I'm consulting with someone about something Caribbean or whatever, I seldomly run into people like you. Gary Matalon was probably one of the first people that I spoke to that was like, Jamaica is a brand that can be sold in many different formats. He said that shit. And I was like, you are so right. Like I've been looking at that all day long and you're actually doing it in the form of a restaurant, but there's other things that you could do. People like me and you, I think we're moving at a different frequency. And so sometimes we have to like slow down the frequency in order to set up the foundation and sure. work from there.
True.
And I don't know about you, but for me, sometimes I lose patience, right? Like, I'm like, ah, come on. Like, really, we still making these kinds of errors? Like, you know, or I might be moving so fast that I'm not explaining, right? Like, hey, this is why we need to do it this way, or it's why we need to do it that way. And I lose people along the way, right? So back to the example of my boy Cooley, we talk about this all the time because he is part of the ska movement. He took dancehall to the other side.
Yeah.
And he was signed to Universal. You know, he has a whole following. He's like characters in Grand Theft Auto. Like, he has a cult following. And it's a Yadman, right? Like he have like these white kids, these skinhead dudes doing boom, boom, you know, doing all the signs of like Jamaican and dancehall signs. They use it because of him. And we talk about this all the time, about how bridging the gap is so hard because we need like a thousand more people like you that have that vision. That's like, yo, it's not working, but why isn't it working? Like, what are the things that we could fix? And it's not insurmountable. We could fix it. We're just not.
Of course, because it's different. You know what's beautiful about the culture that you and I are from? It's different, right? And in performance, it is so interesting.
Yeah.
When you see Sizzla on stage with a 35-member orchestra and blazing the fire, literal fire going up, that's like Travis Scott on a different level talking about consciousness.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely. He's blazing the fire, you know, and it's still a mosh pit there, but it's a mosh pit like people was, you know, crazy. So it's different and it's sellable, but it needs communicators. It needs people to narrate the culture in front of it. And then these guys who are enigmatic to just destroy the place, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's like, it's exactly what we said. It's an experiential genre of music. Yeah. When you experience it live, it's like, okay, I get it. I'm a fan forever. But I do believe that we got to get back to that place where we're talking more intelligently about who we are and what we stand for, right? There's a tremendous amount of power coming out of Caribbean people, from our history to the role that we played in the revolution to how we impact culture every single day. And I just feel like we're dummying down our shit, right? Like, when Bob spoke, you felt like you were talking to a philosopher that reflected the belief of a whole group of people. I don't know who's doing that. Like, I heard Muta Baruka speak one time and I was like, yo, if I could just make him a digestible artist, yo, Muta will kill them. But like, who's doing it? Like, who's speaking like that, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what we need, man. We got to get back there.
And that's the difference, right? So you have the extremes. So the guys that are so-called conscious, they're not marketable. So they're just far out. And the guys that are marketable, they're just like, oh, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you know, conscious.
Yeah, we need that. We got to find that balance. We got to find that balance. Yeah.
All right, cool. Respect, boss. All right,
yeah, man. Bless.
All right.
If you want to hear the songs mentioned or heard on this episode, go to YouTube or on your favorite streaming platform and search World Music Views playlist to hear more.